Episode 297.
You still really have to sell to them as well, because they know about this technician shortage. They're not dumb. They know that if they really want to, they can probably go down the street and maybe even make a little bit more money. So I think to have them understand that there is a path for you, and even if it is in the shop, can that person become a foreman? Can that person take on a different role? Maybe I've seen technicians where they want to be diagnostic specialists, where they just want to work on electrical diagnostics because that's what they love. They know that maybe they can save their body a little bit by doing so.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results Radio. Listen to learn just one thing from today's episode on your journey to remarkable results. Welcome, aftermarketers throughout North America and around the world. Carm Capriotto here. How are you? Hey, I want to take this moment to thank my worldwide listeners, especially in Australia, France, Germany, Japan, and Spain, and of course, all my great friends in Canada. Hey, thank you for your listenership. Now today, the interview is with Jay Goninen as we talk about his experience on recruiting technicians and a few human resource tips. Jay's with findawrench.com and findamechanic.com. This episode is brought to you by Federal Mogul Motor Parts. Search for parts, get the latest technical updates, and also sign up for their Garage Rewards loyalty program. And who doesn't like rewards? Go to fmmotorparts.com. Hey, keep in mind the power of the RemarkableResults.biz website. The search function alone brings you in touch with a name, idea, or concept you may want to find, and the series collection nicely wraps every podcast into genres. The Tag Cloud, Think Word Cloud, serves up over 80 areas of interest. With a weekly growing catalog, there is something there for you to help bolster your special area of interest or filter the content into a specific subject area, but most importantly, to help grow your business profits. The network of listeners builds every week, and I'm honored to make so many connections like new Facebook friends Gustavo Eric Mucharo, Jim Pava, Chris Lingle, Jeff and Carolyn Bragdon, and John and Wade. And my latest LinkedIn connections to Eric Dawson, Charles Pearson Jr., and Daniel Winter AAM. Hey, thanks for your support of the podcast, and I do wish that you are finding inspiration in every episode. Now, meet Jay Goninen from Find a Wrench and Find a Mechanic, an industry job board. Jay was exposed to the automotive industry at a very young age in the family independent repair shop. Now, after high school, Jay went on to study automotive technology, and ultimately, he ended up back at the shop he grew up in. An unexpected twist happened about a year into his return, and that sent him off on a completely different course. Get the extended bio on Jay Goninen and the Cliff Notes at remarkableresults.biz/E297. Now for Jay, over time, the appreciation and respect gained by being a tech led him to want to connect people. Because of this, Jay started a company called Find a Wrench, which is a recruiting service used by shops around the country to assist them in finding technicians. On top of that, Jay's company purchased a popular niche job board called findamechanic.com. Jay has a passion for promoting the industry and the many talented people we work with, and to be a voice for technicians who usually don't like to promote themselves. We cover a lot of subjects like job supply and demand, job descriptions, hiring inducements, and that you always need to be in recruiting mode, and even some great tips on hiring. Now, listen to episode 297 with Jay Goninen. Hey, a warm welcome to Jay Goninen from Find a Wrench and Find a Mechanic. Ooh, interesting.
Touchy point there, right?
It is. You know, Jay, there's such a thing out there as a tech shortage. You know, it conjures up so many thoughts. Grow your own apprentice programs, dealing with our youth and parents, counselors, secondary, post-secondary. Oh, a million thoughts. And then, you know, everybody says, well, it's really tough to go out and get a plug-and-play technician today where you're going to, you know, go steal someone. And it happens, but more and more service professionals that are saying it's really tough. But then again, how do you find a tech who really wants to move? Are you the right company? Is your culture right? Your benefit program? Are you ready to take on someone who's ready to move? And then what about a tech who wants to move and doesn't know how? So these are going to be our talking points, if you will, if you bear with me, because, you know, it so intrigues me. Find a wrench and find a mechanic, your company's .coms. And so I want to start out, and one of the things that I've been thinking so much about lately is a job description. And I saw some stuff in some of the social posts, and I made a recommendation. Why don't you write a good job description, and there you'll be able to actually find out who it is that you want to hire.
Yeah, and you're kind of reverse engineering that a little bit, right? Because if you go out and you're trying to look for somebody, and it could just be any random Joe Blow, and it's different now than what it was 15, 20 years ago, where you could go down and get a mechanic and be confident that they could come in and replace a carburetor from back in those days. Now with different complex systems and different specialists, right? Because you're going to have different computer systems, different areas of the car or truck or whatever you're working on. And it's not as easy to go just pick somebody out of the crowd, right? And I think it's vitally important that you understand as a shop what you're looking for. I don't think there's a lot of people that do that. I think it's really kind of a lip service thing where we put it down and hope for the best, right? And without even knowing what we truly need as a shop.
We have a town hall academy out there called Hiring for Team Dynamics, and I do, it kind of almost tags on to what we're going to talk about here today. So I encourage everyone to get to the website, just go to search bar and type in Hiring for Team Dynamics, and that'll come up, and give that a listen. But, you know, let me go back to the job description. I'm going to make an assumption that not every shop has job descriptions for their positions. And in your experience as a finder and a hirer of people inside our industry, do you ask for a job description from a shop owner if he was looking for a tech?
I do. So that's one of the first pieces of our process. We actually, we start with a real simple questionnaire on our website for the recruiting side of it. But one of the first things I ask for is that job description. And one of the things that we've really struggled with is that piece of it, is the job description. And I not only tell, when somebody asks me for advice on what to write for a job description, one of the big things that I tell them is you're essentially selling your shop through this. And I think that gets more and more important as we go forward, because there's simply just not enough of these guys to fill these roles, right? And so at some point, it's basic economics in that there's not enough supply to meet the demand. And it's going to get to the point where, you know, I read a while back that there's every day there's 10,000 baby boomers retiring, only 6,000 coming back into the workforce. And so if you look at that, you're losing a net of 4,000 people per day. It's not only going to be our industry that we're competing for people against, you're going to be competing against plumbers, electricians, the sooner we can get to market our business in our shops, the better off we're going to be. And I think that's the very first part of that is in your job description, does your shop stick out any differently than another shop down the road? And if it doesn't, that might be part of your issue.
In the JD, let's call it JD from now on, job description, I love acronyms, I guess. It's a legal document inside the company, and I know it does outline the job duties, and I'll go back to my experience, and I know when we were writing job descriptions, we were having to define mobility, how much a person had to lift, and that really, you know, if you ever got into a workman's comp issue, you were coming back for light duty and the person couldn't perform their full functions, and the full functions are all based on the job description. So I want to caution everyone to, you know, if you're working with an HR specialist and anybody that has that legal side of HR in mind, you have to have that. But basically, it's kind of a job duty thing with some legalese stuff in it, but I guess it's a great, great place to start. And when you're dealing with a candidate who you want to hire, they need to read your job description.
Yeah, and that's part of creating your culture too, right? I know that culture is kind of a buzzword for shops, but when you think about it, if you're not telling them what their expectation is right off the bat, you're setting yourself up for failure down the road. And you lose that accountability factor as well. You're not able to hold them accountable because if they don't know what they were supposed to be doing, and then you want to go out and you go out to the shop and say, hey, you're not doing your damn job. But then the guy says, well, what is my job? And you don't really have anything to go to. It looks embarrassing. I've personally been in that situation before, and you look really stupid. So I think that's the job description is so important and so undersold that I really, really think that by putting the time into a good job description, that you're able to get a ton of value out of it.
I'm talking with Mike Zralik, a technical product specialist with Federal Mogul Motor Parts. So you have this van, and it's the Guru on the Go van, and it's all nicely decked out, and you drop by for lunches and learns. How do shops get a chance to get that van to come to their place?
Well, they can, of course, call into our Guru hotline and request it. They can talk to their parts distributor, you know, and through that channel, we can go out and do some training, or even with us out in the field. You know, if they see us, we do various warehouse distributor type shows, many different events. We're out there everywhere. Just come by and ask, and we'll be more than happy to come by.
Hey, Mike, if I said you were a champion for Federal Mogul Motor Parts, would I be right?
You betcha.
So give me an example.
I live, eat, breathe Federal Mogul on a daily basis. You know, growing up, being in the racing industry, I knew a lot about Moog. I loved Moog. Felpro, same thing. To go out and be able to talk about a company this big, this strong, it makes me happy every single day. I'm so excited to do it on a day in and day out basis.
What are technicians saying after you're done with your presentation?
When can you come back? They want more day in and day out.
They want more, and you have more to give. You've got so many key product lines in the industry.
Oh, we have a ton of product lines and a ton of training that's available, you know, with those product lines and on a technical side too.
How dazzled are the techs to see that compression-loaded ball joint with the pre-installed integral dust boot?
They come unglued. They are so excited about that because less frustrations. You know, they've been dealing with issues in the field of damaging that boot during installation, and it makes it so much easier to put in. And it's a beautiful piece.
Federal Mogul Motor Parts' Garage Gurus is your go-to source for the vehicle training, technology, and answers you need to keep your next job on track. On site, online, or on demand, the Gurus are here to help keep your business and your career on the road to success. Visit fmgarageguru.com. Okay, so let's move on to the tech. The tech wants to make a move. You are going to recommend that every technician looks, and I don't want to go too much deeper into JDs right now, but you want them to see a job description too. They need to know what they're going into.
They do, and I think they're looking for that more now than ever as you get more specialists. Yeah, yeah.
Got it. Okay. So how are we going to encourage a technician who wants to, you know, find a new opportunity for himself and his family? And so many, let's talk about why someone would want to leave a company. They always say they never leave a company, they leave a person.
Yes. I think there's a couple different things. That's generally the start, is that if there's bad management or a personality conflict, which I think techs would be the first ones to admit at times, they can be, there's some egos at play in all situations. I've been a part of that as well. That gets into people leaving people, if that makes sense. But then the other piece that I think gets lost as we talk more about the millennials coming along is the money piece. I think that we discount that really quickly, but when it comes down to it, if they start looking, it's probably because of their boss or because of the money. I would say 80% of the time, that's probably what's driving it.
Boss or money together.
Yeah. Yep.
What else?
Shop environment. I think there's a lot of times where, if we talked about culture, right? So I think culture goes along with what's the makeup of your shop. Is it is it an enjoyable place to come every day? I know that kind of goes back to the people side, but maybe not the management side as much. There's conflicts amongst workers. The other thing that I'm seeing a lot, and this is a concern maybe for some independent shops, is what is my path for growth moving forward? And you're starting to see that more and more of, as a question. And I think as techs start to understand that this is a tough job on your body, they're looking for a way to grow, you know, and use that technical skill, maybe not in a shop environment. And so having an understanding of what each technician's aspirations are, I think, is vitally important. If their growth and they want to grow into a service manager role, and they've got no soft skills or no training with soft skills, that's where you want to start, you know, kind of evolving from there. And I think that's a really, really important thing.
Well, I just had a long discussion today with Jeff Peavy, president of AMI, about soft skills.
Yeah.
And we're going to do an academy on that. So thank you for bringing that up.
You bet.
I want a career path. Those are important questions that a shop owner will need to answer. Do you find they have a path to offer?
A lot of times, no. And I don't know that it's always that there's not a path there to be created either, because I think with growth comes opportunities. If they understand, if a technician understands that, hey, you helped me grow, and it's going to evolve into other opportunities that might not be here right now. I think that's an important selling job to your current technician, your current technicians in the shop, is you still really have to sell to them as well, because they know about this technician shortage. They're not dumb. They know that if they really want to, they can probably go down the street and maybe even make a little bit more money. So I think to have them understand that there is a path for you, and even if it is in the shop, can that person become a foreman? Can that person take on a different role? Maybe I've seen technicians where they want to be diagnostic specialists, where they just want to work on electrical diagnostics because that's what they love. They know that maybe they can save their body a little bit by doing so. And then teaching. I know there's a lot of guys that are excellent at teaching some of the younger generations. And I think that's going to become more and more important to grow these mentors, these internal mentors, to really take care of these technicians. And I think as it's tougher to find these guys, it's more and more important to have that role in a shop.
Okay, my curiosity about moving city to city, you know, here it is, I'm a shop, I'm looking for a mechanic, or I'm looking for a wrench. Again, I don't know what your sites, how you differentiate them.
Yeah.
And it really, it doesn't matter. My question is, have you seen much movement that requires Brown the Mover or the van to move people from city to city?
Still not a lot, but I will say we were just recently at a large career fair at a pretty large technical school down south a couple months back. And one of the interesting things that I saw when we were talking to people and we were promoting both of our websites was we asked them, would you be willing to move? Or I asked that a different way, though. I said, I'm assuming you want to go back home. And there was a surprising amount of kids that said, I don't care. I would be open to moving about anywhere.
But that's just for the young, the young kids in a career fair who see the oyster out there and whatever it may take to get me there. But you know, here's a 15-year technician. He's got enough creds. He's an A tech in a shop. He wants to do better. What do you feel? What do you see? What do you hear about someone looking and seeing a job opportunity on your site, and it's 400 miles away?
I think it's becoming more and more attractive to a candidate. I think before there wasn't a whole lot of attraction because why would you move 400 miles away for a buck an hour, right? Like it just was never really all that attractive. But with different incentive programs now and different bonus structures and sign-on bonuses, I think if any of you out there see and you go browse Help Wanted's, the amount of dealerships, the amount of independents, the amount of shops in general that are offering an initial sign-on bonus is pretty, it's changed a lot over the last couple of years.
So you got kids to move, you got, you know, wife with a job. I mean, there's a lot of factors, but what you're saying, wow, hey, I'm the breadwinner. I've got the most education, the most investment, my tools, my training. I got a hell of an offer on the table, more than I ever expected. Let's go.
Yeah.
Meaning that if you're going to take a leap and get up and go and move, it's got to be substantial.
It does. And I think there's got to be a unique differentiator for your shop too. So if you're on the other end of this and you're trying to attract that 15-year all-star do anything technician, and you're not really all that much different than what the shops in his area already are, why would you move? I mean, if you put yourself in that person's shoes, there's got to be something different and appealing for them to move, right?
Okay, I'm a 15-year guy. The shop has not grown as I've expected it to. I'm a little worried management hasn't kept up. I know guys that are working in a much better environment than I have. They're paying for my training. They're giving me a two allowance. I'm getting a boot allowance. I hear a lot of this going on. Health benefits. Let's talk about health benefits. Let's talk about retirement. Those are all inducers for engagement.
Yeah, and it's not just that anymore. I mean, it's air-conditioned shops. It's nice radiant heat, or it's the creature comforts of a shop that really make a big difference when you're sitting under when it's 11 degrees like it is in Wisconsin today, and you're sitting underneath a hoist and the car's dripping on top of you. It's nice to have some of the benefits that come along with some of those other things.
Yeah, an 11-degree drip versus some nice radiant heat coming at you, and one cancels out the other, right?
Yes, exactly. And it's, I think even more so than that is to understand as a shop what your unique differentiator is, right? Is, I think in the day-to-day operations of everybody's shops, it can get redundant, right? And you need to understand, why is my shop better? You should be able to answer that question. Why is your shop any better than anybody else's? And I think until you can answer that, how are you going to sell that to somebody else? And I think that's where it's just vitally, vitally important.
The differences between finding a tech for a shop or a technician putting up his resume on your site, are there any unique challenges on both sides of the coin?
Yeah, I think the first part of that is as a shop finding the tech. Again, back to the basic economics of not enough supply to meet the demand, that is going to be tough. And I think the future of our industry leads to a technician marketing themselves more, because there are more opportunities out there. And so if I'm a technician right now, and I'm a darn good technician right now, why wouldn't I market myself to make sure, you know, I'm doing my due diligence to see what's out there, because that's what's best for me.
I love what you just said. A technician marketing themselves.
Yeah.
Give me an example.
So that's what we really market with the findamechanic.com site, because that's a job board, right? And whether you're going to put it on a job board or anywhere else, LinkedIn, right? You're starting to see a lot more technicians and mechanics on LinkedIn than you ever have in the past. And a site such as findamechanic.com, what we have, why not put it out there? It doesn't cost you anything. And it's a good way to network. I don't think it's traditional for a mechanic or a technician to network.
Okay. In marketing myself, I would stop to say, oh, okay, I guess I need a resume.
Yes.
Yeah. And is that where you start?
Yeah. And so like through our website, and I hate to pat ourselves on the back here, but they are able to easily make a resume on the website. It's not just that though. I think it's from a shop's perspective. Well, let me, before I get rid of that thought, in terms of marketing themselves as a technician, no technician that I know of likes to put a resume together. It's not a fun process for them. It's not a fun process for anybody, let alone somebody that's not doing it every day. So That's one thing we try to help out with is with a lot of the technicians that we work with. We'll help them put together a resume. I've got a girl that works for me that does a phenomenal job putting together resumes. But I think that's what it takes. And from the shop end, kind of to circle back to the initial part of that question, not always requiring a resume. I actually have a friend that owns a dealership that purposely will not look at the resume prior to sitting down with a candidate. And his perspective on it is that he wants to get to know them in a conversation rather than judge them by their credentials up front. And it's a unique way to look at it, but I like that. And I think from a shop's perspective, maybe having a resume isn't all it's cracked up to be. It's more, can I get this guy in the door and sit down and chat with him and see if maybe there's a fit?
Yeah, there's other ways to figure out if the fit is there.
Yeah.
You know, hire for the attitude.
Right.
Yeah, hire for the attitude.
And your cultural fit, right? Like if you've got a guy that you know isn't going to fit in your shop and it's going to cause a bunch of waves, you might be a great tech, but I doubt you're going to be as productive.
I can't remember who it was, but I think it may have been John Voight who said that we hire for aptitude and we fire for attitude.
Yes, love that.
And we should flip that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, hire for attitude. We can always teach the aptitude. And you know, that's a great point that you bring up. Don't look at the resume. Figure out who the person is, the attitude, their style of behavior, what they really want. And, you know, you may find that they're not a cultural fit.
Right.
Because this person's way beyond where you're currently at, or you're way the heck up here, and he's got to take a leap of faith to fit into your culture. But you know, even if you're not looking for a plug and play A tech, and this person's resume then ultimately shows that they're a B, what's wrong with having a great training program and mentoring to make all of that work?
Yeah. And that, Carm, you hit such a good point there in that I think it was funny. I worked with a shop on the West Coast about a week ago. He called me and was looking for a technician and said, I need an A tech like tomorrow. I said, well, you probably should have been looking 2 months ago.
That's a great point.
Yeah. I mean, that's that. And I see that every day where lack of planning ends up being an urgent situation with a 2-week backlog in the shop and nobody to diagnose the cars. Or if somebody were to leave the shop, then it's kind of like the dominoes fall and you're not able to make up for that. And I think on one of your interviews, this even came across as always be interviewing. I've heard that a lot of times, right? And I think it's really true. The amount of shops that actually do that, I think, is very, very limited. And I think it could give you such a competitive advantage to bring somebody in. Instead of looking for that A tech the day you need them, look at that C tech that's young but has the attitude, maybe not the aptitude. Bring them in. Like you said, their mentoring program, their training program, work with them. They're going to appreciate that you worked with them and were patient with them, and hopefully that pays off down the road. But it's a good plan for the future.
Let me offer an idea for the industry. I wrote down two words here on my little notepad: talent management. Nothing new. I remember what that was all about, how you would assess your people and, you know, if they fit into the right quadrant or that you want to keep them around and they were just lacking in something. And it goes up to your VEC, I need an A-Tech right away. I need an A-Tech right away. Well, tell me about your talent management program.
Yeah.
What's that? Where the C becomes a B, the B becomes an A. And you know what? It goes back to the story. I don't want to train them because they may leave. Well, what if they stay and you don't train them, right? We've heard that over and over again. And I think that's a sobering thought when it comes to talent management. And I guess the exciting thing is, you know, we just did a great thing on growing your business with fleets. What an opportunity to have talent management and all these great programs in place, all these training. You're keeping a training resume and you're growing your fleet business and your revenue starts growing by 10, 12, 15%. Well, you need talent to do that. You can't go out and say, oh, I So I just want to toss that talent management piece out, and maybe I've got to get a Town Hall Academy done on that subject.
I think it's smart, and I think it's the one thing and I grew up in a small shop, right? So my dad's shop that I grew up in had less than five people for the majority of the life of that business. And he still just celebrated his 25th year in business. But I think what happens is maybe some of the smaller shops even think that, hey, you know, that's just some corporate jargon for some of the bigger shops. And I don't think so. And I really think it's important to understand that piece of it, that small shop owners, even though you might not have that HR background, or you might not have that the people background, I guess, can you grow your talent pool within? Because when it comes down to it, we're playing a game, and it's the game of service. And without good people, you're not going to win that game.
It's great to hear that you have some background. Your dad had a business. He still has it. And you grew up in it. And you did a lot of great things inside the industry. So you have empathy for technicians and shop owners.
Absolutely. And I think that's a big piece of why I'm so driven to maybe connect these people, is because I wasn't a very good tech myself. I grew up in it. And I think you just assume that you're going to be a good tech. And I found out later that my strengths were different than that. And I think it gave me an appreciation for people in the shop, technicians, mechanics, that not a lot of other people can have, because it's not an easy thing. I understand what your body goes through. I understand how difficult it is to diagnose an intermittent issue. It's not an easy job. And I think drawing respect to those positions is a big, big piece in changing the perception of that in the industry, and not only our industry, other industries, and trying to maybe clean up that perception a little bit.
Perception, perfect segue into technicians versus mechanics.
Yes. Yeah. And this is a really hot button topic as well. And I think as an industry, something we need to clarify, I get kind of beat up on this every once in a while. Not every once in a while, all the time. If I call somebody a technician, they get mad because they say, well, technicians just replace parts and they don't do anything. And then the same thing will happen the opposite way. Well, mechanics don't know how to diagnose anything. And it's a little confusing, right? Because like, what are we supposed to be? And how do we get to maybe a singular title? I don't know if that's a great way to say it, but to get some commonality of what that is.
But Jay, you're going to go get an echocardiogram from the doctor, and the technician is the person who works the machinery, who produces a result. And I cannot, and I guess, you know, if there were, you know, 10,000 technicians, mechanics, whatever we want to call them in an audience, there would be 10,000 different perspectives. And I know that. But we together as an industry need to figure out how to get together and improve our image.
Yeah.
And I hear mechanic, I hear technician, I hear diagnostician. Does it matter? Does it really matter? Because the motoring public says mechanic. Reporters, news people say mechanic. I'm looking for a good mechanic, and a diagnostician cringes. But, you know, a B-Tech says, yeah, I'm a mechanic. That's what I do. It's like calling someone a carpenter. In my opinion, are these generic titles healthy, going to hurt at all?
So I think to us on a day-to-day basis, it doesn't. I don't think it's really, if a guy can fix a car, that's all you care about, right? At the end of the day, if they're good with electrical, they're, I don't care if they're a technician or a mechanic, they're just really good at what they do. I think maybe, and maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong here, Carm, but I think back in, what was it, the 80s, when there was kind of some shady stuff going on in shops with, I think, the 60-minute special, the 2020 special, where they caught that shop putting shavings at whatever. I think that might have been a turning point from when people tried to go, and I don't know if it was industry, tried to go away from the mechanic image to a technician.
Yeah, but think of the technology that was, you know, coming out on vehicles today. Yeah. We're out of business, you know, this all the new technology and you know, all the new ignition systems and the computers that were in cars. And maybe that was a huge turning point. And, you know, I'd love people to, you know, write me karm@remarkableresults.biz and either straighten me out or, you know, or contribute to the episode. That would be great. I'd be more than happy to take your email. But, you know, when I think about the word tech, and I don't want to belabor this too much because, you know, again, there's so many opinions out there. But we've almost got this thing down where, you know, a C-tech, a B-tech, and an A-tech. Is that a C-mechanic, a B-mechanic, or an A-mechanic? And it's almost like, okay, I'm looking for someone to fix cars for me.
That's all that matters, right?
Right?
That's all that matters. And I think where we get confused is there was that perception where we're trying to change or we're trying to maybe move to technician, the word technician. But when you think about it, like if for example, we talked about on the opening of my site, findamechanic.com, right? That can be controversial because a technician might look at that and say, well, I'm not a mechanic.
No, right.
Say if we said findatechnician.com, is that a vet technician? Is that an x-ray technician? Is that a... So there, it's, when we use the word technician, it's not a singular meaning. I mean, there's other meanings. I think that's where we end up reverting back to mechanic at times.
Obviously, the word mechanic is generic enough that really points to the automotive, because ever since the dawn of you know, of the automobile, mechanic, I believe, was, you know, was in synonym with you fixed cars.
Right.
Probably not a bad strategy for you to have that. Not a bad strategy at all. So always be, you know, we were talking about talent management. And you were talking about always be recruiting. What other kind of great advice can you give to the listener?
So those would be the big things right off the bat is the job description. Make sure you know what you're looking for to start. But then also in that same job description, assuming you have all of the legalities taken care of, is selling your shop in that and trying to stay out, know what your unique differentiator is, if I can say that. And really understanding what you want. Now, the technician side of it, as far as recruiting these people, I think if you're constantly setting a goal to recruit somebody, and not even recruit, interview somebody, I should say interview somebody, set a goal to interview, and if it's tough at first because you're busy, set a goal to interview one person a month. Because what that does is it trains your mind to always be looking for people. And if you bring people in and you sit them down and you understand what they're about, even if you're not going to hire them then, it's a good time to take inventory, take a list of people, so that when you do come into that area where you need that technician tomorrow, you've at least got a Rolodex to go back to call on.
So I'm a shop owner and I'm looking and I get on your site and I post a job. I would assume that I would want to interview every resume I got, no matter what, hands down. Now, maybe there's a few that they just
need to weed them out.
There's a few to weed out, but even some that you don't think could someday down the road become a, you know, an associate. You hire them 4, 5, 6 years down the road. You almost have to invest and then put them in that folder that says the possibility folder. You recommend that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's not only smart, I think it's vital, because that's, you don't want to, oftentimes on our recruiting side, it's probably too late when they're approaching us, right? They need somebody desperately. And so you take that on yourself a little bit and you create that Rolodex of people so that when it does come crunch time, you've got some people to hop on the phone with and try to call them, because that's typically your busiest time, right? And so when you're desperate to find somebody, it's not like you have a whole bunch of time to go out and find these people. It's typically the worst time to find somebody. And so if you don't have a history built up of people, you're really putting yourself backed up against the corner.
I love it. So I'm on your site, I'm interviewing, I'm getting resumes, I'm building my Rolodex. I love that mental reference. That's great. Share with me any great story about a shop owner that did some interviews. He's in his second or third interview. He's getting ready to hire, and it was so close, and he missed an opportunity to hire a really great person because he procrastinated and lost to another shop. Any great stories or advice about that?
I don't know if I have one specifically, because it literally happens every week. Where, again, when you're looking for somebody, it's often the busiest that you're ever going to be, and there's only so long, because I'm kind of the person in between a lot of times, right? And I'm trying to hold these people on, when I say these people, these technicians, mechanics, and I understand the shops are busy, but when you don't get back to that person, you're sending a message that is not very good. And I just recently wrote a blog about this as well, where it's similar to recruiting in football, right? So a college football team, if you have a five-star recruit, you're gonna put all of your effort into that. You're going to go meet their family. You're going to take them to dinner. You're going to do whatever you can to impress them, take them through your facilities. Do you think they have trouble calling that person back? I don't. I think they're probably going to make that person a priority to get back to them as fast as they possibly can. And as shops, we need to do a better job at that. There's absolutely, hands down, the easiest advantage you can have is response time, because the faster you get back to them, the percentage of chance that you're going to land that person goes up drastically based on response time.
I love it. One of the biggest mistakes is follow through.
Yeah.
Any mistake that you see shop owners doing, Jay, that would be a great lesson for them, what not to do or what to do?
So just a real quick one, and this might be the easiest out of everything that I've talked about so far, posting their jobs on their websites. When you go out to I would say most shops, not when I say most shops, 80 to 90% of shops, when I go to their website and they contact me to go do recruiting for them, I'll go look at their website, and they don't have their job posted on their own website, which to me, if I'm looking for a job, where's the first place you're going to go? You're going to go to their website, right?
Yeah, you can learn an awful lot about a company from their website.
You are, and it's shocking how few people post their jobs on their own website.
You are right. In fact, I've seen some real exceptional ones. We're hiring superstars, and you know, and you click on it, and you see the jobs that are out there, and or an online form that you can literally submit your name and again get some follow through going and open up a dialogue. Great point.
Yeah. Thanks.
Good stuff. So you got a great background, UTI, and not only a dad shop, but in many other areas of the industry. And you came up with a wrench about a dozen years ago.
Yeah, it's coming up in this. I've heard my dad complain about the lack of mechanics since I was probably about 8 years old, I think. So I had always known that there was an issue, and it just compounded every year. It got tougher to find people every year. And then when I got into more of those management roles, it became more and more evident that this wasn't getting better. It wasn't easier to find people. And so I came up even with the name Find a Wrench about 12 years ago. It wasn't until recently that we launched Find a Wrench as the recruiting piece to go find techs for shops. And maybe the unique thing, and I think people from outside the industry get confused with what find a wrench is. We're not going and just finding wrenches, right? And I think people in the industry understand that, you know, it was a common phrase that, hey, we need a wrench. You know, we need somebody in the back to get this stuff fixed. And so I have it written up on the homepage of our website that it's kind of an ode to mechanics of past while trying to push technicians in the future forward.
So Find a Wrench is for shop owners?
Yeah. Shop owners primarily. I will have technicians come to me and ask for assistance in placing or in finding work. But yeah, I would say 90% of the people we deal with are shop owners on the find a wrench side.
And the find a mechanic is for who and what?
Both. So findamechanic.com is a job board. It's like an Indeed or something like that, but it's niche focused just on techs, and it's across the country. So both of them are about, all across the country.
Jay Goninen from Find a Wrench and Find a Mechanic. It was very, very interesting. I'm glad we spent some time together.
I am too. I really appreciate it. I appreciate everything you do for our industry, and I think you're doing some really, really great things.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks, Jay Goninen. I enjoyed our discussion on this trending topic. Great insights that can give our listener an edge over recruitment and hiring opportunities. Find the extended bio on Jay and the links to his company in the show notes at remarkableresults.biz/E297. Hey, don't forget to check out the Town Hall Academy Single Subject Roundtable Series. Find this very powerful aftermarket resource archive at remarkableresults.biz/academy. Now, if you need to get in touch, email me, carm@remarkableresults.biz, and also share the love on social media. Now, go and share this episode with someone who can value the power of this story.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.